whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
We got quick hits coming up in 20 minutes. If you're just joining us, Cavs Thunder, big game coming up. But we got Mike Bloomgren as the new O-line coach. And maybe just before we get to the Belichick stuff, I feel like I'd feel a lot better if it was just another proven guy. And I know those guys don't fall off the tree, but it feels like last year Andy Dickerson, who, if I remember correctly, had not been a successful full-time standalone O-line coach. I know he'd been an assistant O-line coach for many a year.
Yeah.
But I don't think he'd ever been an O-line coach in his own volition, or at least had success
in it.
And
he was also in a place in Seattle, though, that, like, Seattle, their GM, was, like, the one emphasis. He's, like, the only person in the league that's, like, we don't care about the offensive line. Yeah. It was a weird spot.
So I didn't love that hire following up of Callahan. And listen, I don't want to – I'm not trying to be negative on it. It just feels like a risk after a risk. And maybe there wasn't a proven one out there. That is also fair. So I'm not trying to bash the Browns. I just would have felt better if there had been a more if a more proven name had been out there, even if one might not like be come to mind right now.
I also, this doesn't get the vibe of somebody that wants to be an offensive line coach for the next decade as everything works out, right? This, like, if you were the head coach at Rice, how long do you want to be an offensive line coach? You probably want to be, you want to be employed for a season, and then you probably want to go be the coach at like a Marshall or somewhere.
Oh, I think when you get fired at Rice after 6 years, I think you've, unless you want to go to like Ashland, which is a great job, by the way.
Possibility, as well.
Not talking down to it.
I mean,
but,
Rice still is it's a major D1 program. It's not like it's like, you're not, it's not even like,
yeah, it's a group of five job, though.
I don't want to offend like a D2 or D3 school or anything like that and be like, it's not, but it's hardly a.
He's angling for the Youngstown State job?
And that's a perfect opportunity, something like that. Like, that's exactly who the fired Rice coach ends up being, the coach at Youngstown State. Yeah, for sure.
So
like, maybe he just does it for a year and then waits for another opportunity and then it's just gone. And then you're back in the same spot you were in.
So while we wait with bated breath on who the Browns are going to hire at OC that Kevin Stefanski knows, we do have to get to a familiar name to Browns fans pulling a familiar move. As the report from Tom Pelissero came in today, multiple teams have inquired about whether legendary coach Bill Belichick would consider or reconsider his move to college football. And, of course, as everybody knows, Belichick's contract at North Carolina includes a $10 million buyout if he leaves prior to June 1st, 2025, which, by the way, I want to point out, I really don't know if that is – I don't know if that's just from college to college. I don't know if that actually applies to the NFL. I don't think we ever got clarity on that. But it would be the most Belichick thing. The guy who took the Jets job for one day is forced to do it. And then resigned, for him to then take the UNC job, be there for a month, and then be like, I've learned my lessons, I'm on to Las Vegas.
Something's off about this to me, Nick, and I can't quite figure it out. The Raiders thing is what feels fishy to me, though, because Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were trying to get as far away from each other as they possibly could. It was basically hey, Bob Kraft, choose which one you like the most, because they couldn't stand each other, and then years removed, now all of a sudden Tom Brady wants to get back in bed with Bill Belichick? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
All right, can I tell you, I don't think it's the theory, but it's a theory that came to mind when I was thinking about this. What if this was just Bill Belichick getting back at the NFL for snubbing him?
Which he's done constantly in the time now that since he's been hired by North Carolina.
What if he has no inclination to actually go to the pros? But, and by the way, there's added emphasis to leak this report because Tom Brady, who kind of was the end of your career in New England, him forcing his way out of New England, and the way things went and where the Patriots went without Tom Brady and what Tom did in Tampa without Bill, would it put it past you if Bill Belichick's like, oh, you guys are going to call my agent when I put out feelers before I took this job and you snubbed me, now a month later you're desperate, and Touchdown Tommy himself was going to call me about that lame-ass Raiders job. And there were other teams that apparently reached out. But, the Jaguars apparently reached out? Oh, okay. I'm going to leak this to make myself look better.
Yeah, here's the reality, though, and this is what I would tell. This is what I would tell Bill, is that it's already been the most one-sided divorce we've ever seen. It used to be a debate. Who won that, Brady versus Belichick? Brady has so emphatically won that and going to Tampa and winning the title, and then in Belichick basically just doing nothing in the 4 years prior. Like, we We look at Belichick totally differently than we did 4 years ago, and it's all because of the success that Tom Brady had. Like, I'm sorry, you're not winning that, and nothing is going to turn that around.
Yeah, one of them has a smoke show 24-year-old girlfriend and is not the greatest quarterback in NFL history.
Hey, when
Bill ain't losing.
When I can
he might not have won, but he's not
now,
losing.
When I can emphatically tell you now that Andy Reid is going to be the best head coach in NFL history when this is all said and done, that's how we know Belichick had a big fall.
I generally apply this theory to the NFL. The worst job in the NFL is better than the best job in college, right? Because in college, there's recruiting, there's so much minutia goes into it.
Belichick, by the way, is going out of his way to point out the amount of times that he's on the road. Yeah. Have you seen the videos of him and his son? His son riding shotgun with him as they're just kind of like traveling through?
I didn't know that, but I will tell you, the most I've ever related to Bill Belichick was tweeting out pictures of the curbside delivery for barbecue in North Carolina. I was like, you get it, Bill. You get it.
Can't even take the time to stop in and eat the restaurant. It's all curbside because he's on the go.
But I got to be honest with you. I do not know that the Raiders job would be better than what he's got set up in college, because to take the college job, he twisted and turned that thing to get every single thing, every amenity he could possibly want, including having an NFL-style setup, which would lighten the load that he – like, how many college coaches have it to the degree that Bill is walking into that job, creating that program? Very few. Even at, like, Blue Bloods, you don't have it as good as Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. The Raiders' job is awful.
It's bad.
I mean,
we're talking about the North Carolina job, if he could end up in a playoff next year.
Yeah, and by the way, it's like with the way you can turn around a team, it's plausible. If those guys just want to go to the NFL.
But you know what a win that is for Belichick?
Yes.
Especially in this post-Brady divorce that we're talking about, that's such a massive win to take a college football team to the playoff, North Carolina college football team in the playoff.
If he won 33 games the next 3 years and was in the playoffs each one of those years, whether he won a national title or not, it would be a pretty strong exclamation point on his legacy as a coach in general. I don't know you're putting any sort of like end of the sentence. You're not putting anything at the end of the sentence with that Raiders job. That is a bad job. Mark Davis is a weird knob.
He's a bad owner.
And
we talked about bad owners yesterday. He's one of the worst owners in the sport.
I think Tom Brady being involved should be a detractor. Like, is Tom going to come down and tell Bill, as part owner, Tom will have power to tell Bill how it's going to be. And that's not how Bill's going to want it.
Yeah, we get another fight between the two of them. It blows my mind. I don't believe it. I just don't believe the report, mainly because I just cannot believe the idea that Brady would come crawling back to Bill when he spent so many years arguing over Alex Guerrero and trying to go ahead and find his own way in New England.
Oh, I totally believe it.
And Brady, okay. Part of the Brady-Belichick feud was the idea that Brady wanted more credit than what he was being given. Now he's going to go off and give credit to what's happening with the Raiders to Belichick? No chance.
He's seen Mark Davis's haircut. He knows what he's up against. Like, there's a
unless
part
he's
of
trying
me,
to put the bad juju that already exists on the Raiders onto Belichick to lessen his head coaching record and everything else. But that would be such a cut off your nose to spite your face type move that I can't even get around it.
Like, here's the thing. This is not a good coaching cycle. The Raiders' job, and I said of NFL job, the Raiders' job, of all the openings, it's the worst job. You don't have a quarterback. You don't have a top three pick to get a quarterback. There isn't a veteran quarterback unless you really want to go the Aaron Rodgers route. Like, they're where the Browns are.
Is it better than the Saints' job?
I don't know.
A bunch of cap space problems.
Yeah,
you got a quarterback that is like, I'm not taking any cuts here, but he's not a good quarterback.
I think the Saints ownership is a better ownership than the Raiders is, and I think
that's
Loomis
family?
Yeah. Well, no, it's the Benson family, but I mean...
Oh, you're right, I'm sorry.
Like, they've allowed you to do the cap stuff, which is the similar stuff that the Browns are doing, by the way, so that means that they're forking over a lot of money for that to happen, so they are spending money, they're giving you that flexibility, but yeah, I mean, and here's the other thing, like, just... Your coach, here's the other part of this that I just don't think we talk about enough with the Raiders. You don't have home games anymore. Because it's in Vegas, your great hope is that 50% of the fans at that stadium might be your fans.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Vegas this last year when the Browns took on the Raiders, and it was incredible the amount of Browns fans that were out there. Well, and they're going to be out there again this next year, too.
And by the way, it's not just Browns fans that you have to worry about. The other, it's of every other team that have no rooting interest. So, like, it's
are you making that trip, by the way? Are we both going to make that trip?
Are they going to let us?
Maybe.
And we'll have to talk about it. I don't think they're going to let me anywhere near Vegas. I think they realize.
Yeah. Nevada's like, oh, geez, this is what we do for a living, holding these bachelor parties, but Nick can't come.
I'm not talking your friends in the desert. I'm talking our friends in corporate who just got an afternoon show and don't want to have to reconfigure that in 10 months' time or whatever.
You're
it is.
Like those bachelorette parties that are like, Vegas can't handle us. It's like, yes, they can.
No, they do
this every single day.
No, that's the point. I think everybody knows Vegas can and will handle me. I think we're all self-aware enough to know what a bad idea that is, but I'm down totally. Yeah, let's do this.
I think we got a chance.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm going to buy a house. That'll be the perfect time to then try and gamble the house away, right?
Yeah, that's how that works.
All right, perfect. But it's the NFL, so I can't just outright say this is not a thing. But man,
it just doesn't make sense to me.
I just can't. Oh, what? Belichick wanting to go back to the NFL?
No, the Raiders being the team, Tom Brady being the one being like, yeah, Belichick, I need you back in my life. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I think the key wording there is Pelissero saying multiple NFL teams have inquired about him. I think the Jags would be a much more.
All right, let's talk it out for a second. We know the Bears did not inquire about Belichick. That
Correct.
Makes absolutely zero sense with that franchise and organization.
Because he would have waited for that job.
Patriots clearly did not reach out back to Bill. That is 0% probability there. Jets? He's not going to the Jets. That's about as firm of a statement as I can possibly make because of the prior relationship with Belichick and the Jets, and that being one of the teams he's hated more than any other team in the NFL.
His people reached out to the Jets, and the Jets didn't return their call.
That would be the dumbest thing imaginable.
It's the Jaguars. That's what Pelissero
said. It's got to be, yeah.
So, and by, that's a threat because Shad Khan has money, and he just the other day on a Zoom with Trent Baalke, the GM, basically said, if a coach can convince me to fire Trent Baalke, I'll do it.
That was cold-blooded.
That was. But you know what? It's a definition of bleep you money. Quick hits with Jared Allen talking about Cavs Thunder. It's not Jared Allen. It's Evan Mobley. And I don't know we're going to let Evan Mobley talk about this game again. Or any game. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. Let's get to quick hits. I almost said in case we missed it. It's been a busy day. Let's get started here. Huge game, as I mentioned. Cavs 31-4. Thunder 30-5. A game that will appear on ESPN. Cavs big Evan Mobley set the stage for this game.
Feels good. Finally get some national coverage. And it's going to be a big game for us. But at the same time, try not to focus on that aspect. Just focus on the basketball side and all the assignments we got to do to get this win.
I love Evan. He totally harshed my mellow. Because Evan pushed the narrative about, oh, we got to get more attention on this team. But he was like, yeah, we got to get more attention on this team.
You sound like Michael Jackson.
You're being ignorant. Bill Simmons, you're being ignorant. I just got to say, I love Evan. Great ball player. If you're gonna tag onto the narrative of hey, this is a great opportunity to get more national exposure, I need you to do something a little bit more than that. That was a little puppy dogish.
I like that he doesn't care that much, or at least in his words, doesn't seem like he cares that much.
But again,
that's a good twist on this.
So I opened this up in the back studio, getting ready for this, and I was like, yeah. Oh, Mobley weighed in. Awesome. He said it's about national ESPN game, and I heard it, and I was like, that did not move at all.
I mean, do you feel...
That did not do anything for the Gets Us Meter.
Is there an Evan Mobley clip you can point to that you remember where you're like, whoa, he really went for it, because he doesn't really do that.
All right, in fairness, true, but this is one if you're gonna lean into, which the Cavs have done for like a week now, we're not getting the national respect. I need something a little bit more than, great chance to get a little bit of love out there.
If you're not a get up guy, you can't just become that. That's just not. I don't think that's who he is.
Then don't engage. Just give us the Stefanski. Give me the full Stefanski. I love you, Evan. We can do better.
Omaha.
I have no idea if you're still watching any of the HBO Hard Knocks around the AFC North show.
Oh, that's still a thing.
It's still happening.
Oh, that's great.
I wouldn't call it a thing. It's
congrats.
Still happening. Yeah. Congrats to who? It's not me. I'm not taking part in it. But there's some clips
jobs,
that did
infrastructure.
There are some clips that did go viral. Myles Garrett talking to Roger Rosengarten, who's on the Ravens, and
this is like their accountant.
No, he's a lineman. He plays on the team.
Yeah, sure.
After the game, this is an exchange between Myles and Roger. Here we go.
No, I'm a nobody, but if I get that jersey, y'all winning games, y'all looking great. Yeah, never nobody. I got you.
You got me?
Yeah.
That was nice. Yeah, I like the presentation by Roger to be like, I'm a nobody, I know I don't matter, but I'd love your jersey because clearly you're going to be a Hall of Famer. And then Miles didn't just push him aside. Miles was very nice about that. I loved it.
Roger Rosengarten.
You sound like you're doing
Garter?
The...
Rosenbagger?
What was our name in the Cubs movie with the kid?
Henry Rowan
Rookie of the Year? Henry Rowan Gardner. That's what it sounds like.
So Roger Rosengarten, CPA, he guilted him. He reversed him. That's what you do. There's a very simple premise. Hey, I'm nobody.
By the, I'm a nobody. You're playing in the NFL. Yeah. You're clearly something.
No. He did the thing of, well, you're too great. And he basically put Miles in a position where he's like, I mean, I kind of got to give him the jersey now.
You don't have to do anything in that scenario.
I think. And here's the thing:
they pay for those jerseys. You don't have to do anything in those situations.
I didn't know they paid for the jersey.
If you give them away, they make you pay for them.
That's the dumbest thing in the world. That's
you either get to buy them at the end of the season, or then if you give them away, they charge you per jersey that you give away.
It's a billion-dollar industry.
I know. These are the rules.
That is, these NFL tycoons need to be stopped. So does Roger Rowan Garter III, CPA, Esquire.
Omaha!
I just thought of the Roman J. Israel Esquire jokes from SNL, and now it's just stuck in my head. The Steelers have lost four straight games heading into Saturday's dust-up with the Ravens. In Baltimore, neither the offense or the defense are playing particularly well, and Steelers fans and media have been incredibly negative about their team, which led to our very own Ken Kerman calling into Pony and Muller yesterday on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh and letting it fly.
KC, you'd like to give us a pep talk?
Why are you guys acting like you've already lost by 50?
Because our team stinks right now and they're playing their worst football of the year.
Oh, God, cry me an effing river. Are you not? You're like begging him to play into the Ravens' hands. You want him to throw the ball with a guy who had a serious hand injury and can't grip the ball? You want him to do that? Why can't you just go and drag him into the gutter like you do every other team and come out with the best chance to win?
No one has implied that we want to see them throw it 50 times, but
you
that's okay.
Just said you'd rather, well, what are you going to do? You're going to lose by 17 again?
Oh,
you guys got to buck up.
That's how you do it, Ken. That's a good job, one, of trolling Pony and Muller, and two, Ken's right. I have a few Steelers fans down the familial line, and they are acting like they're 3-14. It's embarrassing. And so
they're all melting down right now.
And here's the thing. I think you're going to win. Ken is right, by the way. Muck it up. Just muck it up. Make it an absolute fist fight, and you might have a chance to keep it close, and maybe you get the right hit on Lamar. Maybe you take the game. Who knows? But this idea that Steelers fans are, you've lost four straight. Well, you're in the damn playoffs.
They're being adults about it. They're being adults about it. They're being realist.
They're being
very real about what's going to happen this weekend, and they know it. And I respect that approach by Steelers fans.
No, they're calling for Mike Tomlin's job. It's the epitome of dumb.
They know the limitations on this team.
They can, by the way, they're going to play the game. They haven't lost yet. Save the freak out.
Haven't they?
For after.
Haven't they, Nick?
No,
haven't
they haven't. The game has not happened. I promise
haven't,
you.
Haven't they, Nick?
I would have seen it.
They know they're cooked. A team that isn't cooked, Jim Harbaugh, the Chargers. And Justin Herbert was asked about at what point he realized that Jim Harbaugh was just a little bit different.
I think when he talked about remembering the day that he was born was probably the first day that he kind of told us the whole story and how he remembered looking out the window. And I think it was a cold, snowy day. And I really hope he does remember that. That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, I believe that Harbaugh thinks that he remembers the day that he was born. Like, maybe at, like, the age of 5 or 6, he started thinking, oh, yeah, I remember that. And he's made up through his mind the idea that he remembers the day that he was born. But it's insane for him to think he remembers the day that he was born.
I just think it's great that Jim Harbaugh believes in himself so much that he can just say whatever. Like, I agree with you. He truly believes this. And I would like to have him drug tested. Was he with Rogers in
Costa
Rica?
It doesn't always go to ayahuasca, I promise you. Sometimes it does, though.
Could be glaucoma. He's living in L.A. now.
What's your earliest memory? How old were you?
I was like 2, and my parents went to move the car.
You remember 2?
Yeah.
Oh, I got nothing until I'm like 4 or 5.
Here's my traumatic memory. No one told me that they weren't leaving. So I was there at the gas station with my grandparents, and I see my parents start to pull away. Now, it turns out they were just moving from a pump to another place.
Yeah.
But I thought they were leaving me.
Well, you didn't know. You're 2.
I just had like my little engineer cap on. I had like little coveralls, and I was just crying inconsolably. And they're like, dude, And they're not going anywhere.
Did they dress you up like a train conductor?
I wanted to be a train conductor when I was two. I was fascinated with trains.
What point did you give up that dream?
About 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
There's still time.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of life left.
Yesterday, we played Kirk Herbstreit talking about his social media presence.
I had Twitter a long time ago. I don't have it. I just have a buddy. My son tweets stuff out, or I don't. It's ridiculous.
Oh, this makes more sense now. Okay.
Yeah, I don't read anything. I don't see anything. Nothing. Nope. No chance. I don't pay attention. I don't look at it.
By the way, that was courtesy of On3 Sports. Today, Kirk Herbstreit tweeted, just woke up and seeing how devastating the fires in Southern California. We obviously just left that area calling the Rose Bowl, and I know so many people that are in harm's way thinking and praying for everyone's safety in that region. So does he get credit for being kind and sympathetic about the tragedies going on in L.A., or was this going to his son or his friend? He literally made himself out to be a lying ass clown in about 24 hours.
It's his son or his friend. I'm okay. I thought he was lying yesterday. I maintain that he's still lying. I don't think you can live on planet Earth and just avoid all of social media. I just don't think that's a thing that you could do unless you just didn't grow up with it in any sort of way. And Herbstreit's been around long enough. He's there. But I do think some people just go ahead and cast off their social media if they're people like Herbstreit and have other people run it.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
And so for that tweet, I don't believe... I can believe the idea that he didn't actually tweet that.
But I can't because the things that he said that the other guys tweet are... They tweet videos, they tweet things of his appearances, stuff like that. Not like opinion things. So he clearly... By the way, even so... Did he tell somebody, hey, can you put out like a sympathetic tweet for California? Because if so, I honestly think that's lazier or worse.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know how this world works. Didn't Ross tell us he doesn't run his own Instagram?
No. It's TikTok, which makes sense.
He doesn't run his own TikTok?
He's an old. Olds should not be running their own TikTok unless you're me.
Anything can happen. Whoever's running that, anything can happen.
No, Ross is just too successful. Herbie, Twitter, I'm not buying it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, clearly Herbie's not as successful as Ross Tucker.
I've been saying it for a while.
He's going to join us in a half hour, which might be the nicest thing you've ever said about Ross Tucker.
That's why I said it, because he's coming up in 30 minutes.
All right, next up. so obviously with the Chiefs blowing the game against the Broncos, it knocked out the Bengals. And in the New Heights pod, Travis Kelce addressed whether or not they played all the backups to go ahead and make sure Denver got the win and Cincinnati could be knocked out of the postseason.
Well, there's some people alleging that it was a purposeful letting get your ass kicked.
I ain't scared of nobody.
I'm not alleging this.
I wanted them in the playoffs.
I'm not alleging this.
I want to slay every dragon one by one, like Mortal Kombat. I don't even want this to be like we play the lowest seed. Just give me the best teams. AFC, NFC. Give me all of them. Mortal Kombat style. I'll go through every one of them, just giving them my best effort. I ain't scared of a single soul, man.
You didn't want to see the Bengals in Burrowhead or in Cincinnati.
I'll play them at the Walmart parking lot. We can have our own game in the offseason. Well, we really duke it out again. I love competing against the greatest. The Bengals were a fun team to watch there towards the end of the season.
I believe him.
I shook. He cursed too many times.
Well, that was him being edgy.
Yeah, no. Because if you listen to most clips, they don't curse. I mean, okay, they curse a little bit. They don't curse. Was that 10 bleeps within a 50-second clip?
It was a decent amount of them.
It's 40 seconds.
Yeah. No, he was shook. Now, it actually made me believe it more often. Come on. You don't do the I'll slay every dragon. I was talking about Taylor Swift for a minute.
Oh, easy now. Whoa.
Talking downtown.
Whoa. Swifty's coming him, not me, for that one.
Now we got one coming in the studio in about 5 minutes. That'll be fun. No, I this is 100%. Yeah, they. I'm not saying they got dusted 35
to nothing.
If
they hadn't just won back-to-back titles, I would be calling BS on this. I'd be like, oh, you want the easiest path? Everyone always wants the easiest path. You don't want to take on the hard teams. With Kelce, I think he generally just wants to take on the hard teams. I think he loves the idea that there is no easy road and the Chiefs just go through everybody.
Too much cursing. Unbelievable. 216-474-0092. Are you buying what Travis Kelce's selling there? I'm not. I'm returning it with the receipt. Matt Pinto, who is the Thunder Radio Network play-by-play man, he's going to join us next. We're going to get really just talk about how much of a measuring stick this game is from the OKC side of things. It feels like a big one for Cleveland. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. He is the voice of the Oklahoma City Thunder. He joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Matt, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, guys. How are you?
Very good, man. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm curious. We're viewing this as a regular season measuring stick game for the Cavaliers. Is that maybe how OKC fans and media are viewing it as well?
Yeah, you know, they're not real keen on the words measuring stick. They're all, you know, 1 of 82, and this may sound very trite and boring and cliche. They are continually in the improvement mode, whether it be game day, off day, and again, it sounds boring, but it really has served them to continue to ascend. Last season, as the youngest team ever, being a top seed in the conference going into the playoffs, and then the youngest team to ever win a series, because of that sort of mentality that they bring. And I think they absorb blows, they absorb successes, and they do it in sort of a middle-of-the-road way where it supports them and serves them moving ahead. And they're excited about the matchup. There's no question about that. They recognize two powerhouses to this point in the season. Both have somewhat divergent strengths, although both are pretty good on the side that's perceived. They're not elite. So I think they're excited about it. They certainly were excited about their matchup with the Knicks on Friday of last week, where the Knicks had won 9 straight. They had won 13 straight. Excited to face the defending champion Celtics Sunday, and they extended their win streak with a 13-point win in that one. So they recognize the magnitude of the moment, and I think they're excited to rise to it. But as a measuring stick, I think it will give them a sense of, from a learning standpoint, where they are against the better, the higher-level teams in the NBA.
Matt, even as we're just speaking, I got a notification on my phone. It's like Darius Garland feels like the Cavs are being overlooked, and he's being overlooked. And it just seems like it's every other day we get that storyline here out of Cleveland. Do Thunder fans feel like you guys are overlooked, or is this just the beginning stages of what is going to be a really nice run, so you don't even consider that?
Did you enjoy watching the Thunder on Christmas Day in the aftermath of being the top seed in the West a season ago with the youngest, most elevatingly ascending team in the NBA? No, they weren't on. So I think the Thunder know what the Cavs are speaking of, and they've experienced plenty of it themselves. And for smaller markets in this league, unfortunately, that's the reality. Unless you have a bona fide high level superstar like Giannis is in Milwaukee. So unfortunately, the league has not yet recognized that it's about time to turn the page from LeBron and Steph. And there are built-in ratings of those two guys. These are two teams that will carry the torch forward for this league. And I'm glad to see that both of these games between the two, Cleveland and Oklahoma City, are being nationally televised tonight on ESPN, then next Thursday in Oklahoma City on TNT. That's a good thing.
Matt Pinto, Thunder play-by-play man on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we know about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, MVP, the leading MVP candidate right now in terms of gambling odds. I'm just curious, what's going to be the difference between OKC being in the NBA Finals this year and not?
That's an impossible one to answer, because there always seems to be a rite of passage for young teams that progress and expand and grow over time, right? The Celtics went through it for an extended period of time before they finally broke through last season to win the whole thing. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to when Caruso and Holmgren are healthy. How much better does that make this team's defense and overall team? We don't know those things. They're variables that will kind of resolve themselves over time. I do know this team has an uncommon maturity for a team that's second youngest in the NBA, that they exhibit every game. They bring physicality. They bring an approach that's selfless. So they play the game the right way. I know the Cavs have a lot of those components under Kenny Atkinson. They display every night as well. So to me, this is as good as it gets in the league in terms of playing the game the way it was designed to be played. And two teams that have competitive fire that's going to show itself tonight in what I hope will be a classic.
So some I don't want to say detractors of the Thunder say you need another superstar-level player there to truly elevate this thing to another level, in addition to just the ridiculous talent. And Sam Presti has, I believe, 75 more draft picks to go through the rest of this decade. I'm curious how much talk there is about needing to add to this core before you can get to that point where you get to that rite of passage and become a team that might be capable every year of being in the NBA Finals.
Well, the thing is, and the reality of the market size the Thunder are in Oklahoma City, somewhat similar here, although I think you guys have a little bit of an upper hand in terms of the economics and the demographics of what Cleveland is versus OKC, is that did you see when they acquired Shai Shea becoming Shea? The answer is no. Nobody did. Everyone thought he'd be a good player, but not at this level, not Jordan-esque in terms of some of the numbers he's putting up on both sides of the ball. So I think they really believe in developing their own players. J-Dub, Jalen Williams is taking the next step. I think he's an all-star this season. Chet Holmgren, once he gets back healthy, is a guy that has superstar potential. So I think they look more that way than they do, who do we go grab elsewhere to bring in? It's the way that they've had success previously, and I think it's by design the direction they're going right now overall.
What's the better unit in your mind? Is it the Cavs offense or is it the Thunder defense?
It, really no way to tell until we see him go head-to-head. And I think the one thing that objectively I viewed is who's had success against the Cavs? The Atlanta Hawks. They beat them twice. Once in Cleveland, the only team to break through in Cleveland. And one of the things the Hawks do is they have quality wing defenders. The Thunder have that as well. So I'll be curious to see how do the Cavs deal with the Thunder's strength, which is perimeter defense in this game tonight. Can Hartenstein and J-Dub hold up inside against Evan Mobley and Jared Allen? I think those are the intriguing elements to this game as it's going to unfold. And we don't know, because I know the Knicks came in with a lot of offensive bravado about what they were accomplishing at the time. They got shut down completely in the second half by the Thunder defense. The Celtics had 65 points at halftime against them Sunday and scored 27 in the second half. So as the game wears on, this team has tended to make adjustments and get its physicality into the game and kind of wear opposing teams down. So that's one of the really intriguing elements of how this night's going to unfold for certain.
So, no Chet Holmgren tonight. You kind of mentioned, I think he's only played 10 games this year. How does the absence of him change how they want to play, or does it?
It does, because he's a pick-and-pop threat where Isaiah Hartenstein is not guarded a lot of times around the elbows. And so that really puts a premium on being crisper in execution, screening, cutting. He's an outstanding passer. And when angles present themselves and they deploy the right way in spacing, he puts the ball where it needs to go. So different talent, highly skilled talent is Hartenstein, and he's brought a lot of basketball IQ that's aided this team on both ends of the floor.
Cavs, you know, they come out and they punch guys in the face. We saw it with the Warriors game early on when the Warriors were really hyped early on in the season. Cavs just came out first quarter, just guns a-blazing. Thunder are 9-4 when trailing by double digits. What about Oklahoma City has shown you that when they get punched in the mouth, it just seems like they're just not out of these games?
Four straight wins, went down double digits 9 times on the season. That's what tells me that. They know it's a 48-minute game, and even if the Cavs jump out, say, I don't know, 18-7 tonight, the Thunder aren't going away. And they've proven that against the elite teams in the NBA this season. Not bragging, I'm just, you know, stating facts as to what they've shown the capacity to do during the course of the season. The Thunder will give the full 48 tonight. They do that every game, and I know the Cavs will as well, and that's what has this game elevated at a level it should be. And unfortunately, the one-day run-up should have been preceded by a multiple-day run-up if this were the Lakers and the Warriors in the heyday of Steph and LeBron.
Matt, the Cavs have the best record in the NBA. The Celtics are the defending champions. The Thunder are coming off a win over the defending champions at home. What would be the more impressive win to you, beating the Cavs tonight in Cleveland or beating the Celtics on Sunday at home?
I would answer that with a yes. Excuse me. Both extremely high-level, impressive wins. The Cavs have been extraordinarily consistent at an elite level all season, 15 straight to start the season. They've won 18 of 19 at home. To find a way to win in this building tonight would speak volumes about the Thunder, where they are and where they are aspirational to go. And having beaten the Celtics the way they did, shutting down Boston's three-point attack at an alarmingly high rate in the second half of that game Sunday was eye-opening, and I think the league, if they paid attention, had a chance to see that the Thunder defense is real and sustains and can wear teams down. So I think that, you know, the Thunder view this as a great opportunity to learn about themselves against a truly great opponent, and that's exactly the approach they'll take throughout the course of the game.
Matt, obviously, you know, you're doing so many games. So I have no idea, and obviously got a better look tonight. I have no idea how many actual games of the Cavs you've been able to see. But what impresses you about this Cavs team? What in particular do you like about this team?
The way they space the floor, the three-point shooting. Kenny Atkinson is an offensive genius. Really thought he got the short end of the stick in Brooklyn when they let him go. I'm really glad for him. He got an opportunity with this group of guys because they're really gifted and talented offensively. Evan Mobley's ascension, taking that next step offensively. Love their bench. They bring great energy. They also can, you know, punch people in the mouth with LeVert and Ty Jerome, who we love in OKC. The early stages of his career were spent with the Thunder. So just there are a lot of components. There are a lot of things that have fired for them. Garland's resurgence under Atkinson has been fun to watch. And Donovan Mitchell, we know well from the time he was with the Jazz, is just a every game bring massive force to what he does. So this is not a shock to me. I don't know that they can sustain this winning percentage. I don't know if the Thunder can, but Cleveland's a good team, and Cleveland's going to be a team that's around fighting for that one seed all season long in the East. There's no question in my mind about that.
Between Darius Donovan and Evan, who's most important to stop or slow down tonight for the Thunder?
I would say Mitchell, just because he can get on a heater that, you know, generates 20 straight points that can turn a game, but it's not like that's 1A and 1A's dramatically separated from the other two. You've got to do the job on all three, and they can't allow Mobley to dominate the game defensively. They have to space the floor well and pick their spots as to how and when they attack him. So I think there's a lot of layers strategically to how this game's going to unfold.
Matt, we're super excited about this. We know you got to run, but congrats on the 2024 National Sports Media Association Award. Now that you have the power next year, maybe grease the wheels for your boys, Nick and JP, okay?
There you go. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. I don't think he's going to do it. Matt Pinto there on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I tried. I was thinking he's got his, you know, like maybe it's like the NFL where you got to vote for Miles.
Yeah, well, right? We've got to start the campaign somewhere,
Yeah,
Nick.
You got to do the Stefanski and please, Miles, stay because we're going to say you should be DPOY. And I thought maybe Matt could do the same for us. And then it really went nowhere.
Well, better luck with Ross.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider, who would totally help get us nominated for the NSMA Award for 2025, as long as he got it first. Next on 92.3 The Fan.